The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Looking for a positive and energizing boost to the mental health conversation with a special bend toward the needs of teen girls and young women? You are in the right place. Welcome to the Mary Walden Show. Yes, there are challenges. Yes, there are struggles. And all across North America, there are people and resources to help and enrich our journey. We hope today's program will help provide you with both information and inspiration as we embark on an in-depth mental health conversation. Now, here is your host, Mary Walden.
Thank you for joining me on the Mary Walden Show. I'm your host, Mary Walden, a licensed clinical social worker. Why are patient, giving, and selfless people consistently attracted to selfish, controlling, and narcissistic people? Why does this pattern of attraction seem to repeat itself again and again? And why is it that these pairings often stand the test of time and develop into long-term, albeit dysfunctional and hurtful relationships? A new book, The Human Magnet Syndrome, Why We Love People Who Hurt Us, helps break down and demystify the forces at work that cause people to consistently attract partners who hurt and mistreat. And today, I'm delighted to welcome to the show the author of that book, Ross Rosenberg. Ross is a licensed clinical professional counselor and a certified alcohol and drug counselor. He is a national seminar speaker and consultant on issues spanning sex, love and internet addictions, codependency, narcissism, and borderline personality disorder. Since August of 2011, Mr. Rosenberg has offered the seminar Emotional Manipulators and Codependents, Understanding the Attraction. And he is here with us today to discuss his new book that has just been published by Premier Publishing and Media and is hot off the press, The Human Magnet Syndrome, Why We Love People Who Hurt Us. Welcome to the show, Ross.
Well, thank you, Mary, for having me on. I'm very excited to be on the show.
And I am so glad to have you here. This was a great book. I really enjoyed reading it. And let's just get to it. Why did you write this book?
You know, I think of the book that it wrote itself. I once told my wife that I have a book in my head and it's going to, and all I need to do is sit down in front of a computer and write it. And she would look at me quizzically like, what? But really, this book is about my own journey, my own transformation as a person who was seemingly, magnetically attracted to unhealthy women. And despite my pain and despite my desire to not repeat those patterns, I did. And so I, like many therapists, I sought to seek psychotherapy to figure out, you know, what is wrong with me. I mean, it's easy to blame the other partner, especially if they're harmful. But when it comes down to it, I was a part of that relationship, or as I call that, dance. And so over time, with the help of friends, mentors, therapists, I started to understand that there was something inside of me that unconsciously, almost magnetically, led me to a certain type of person over and over again. And from there, the more I learned, the more I took note of these lessons, and then I started to jot them down. And about 6 or 7 years ago, I wrote an essay called Codependency Don't Dance, which is on thehumanmagnetsyndrome.com. And from that essay came a seminar that I wrote. And that seminar seemed, I pulled it all together, and I've been doing that seminar for almost 2 years. And the seminar has done so well that the company, CMI, who also is a publisher, asked me to write a book about it. And so that's the short version of the journey towards the book.
Well, it is a great journey indeed and a great story. And I want to emphasize for our listeners, while it's so courageous of you to share that this has a lot to do with your personal experience, this book is really, it's not a memoir at all. It's very quantitative, really. And we're going to get to just how quantitative it can be and how useful it can be for our listeners. But let's start with, I guess, the obvious question. What is human magnet syndrome?
The human magnet syndrome is a term that I created to describe that unconscious, invisible force that brings people together in a romantic relationship. There's something that happens between two people when they meet, and if they end up being romantic partners, long-term romantic partners, they will all say something pulled them together. We use the term chemistry, and chemistry, according to my professional and personal beliefs, is an unconscious magnetic power that recognizes a person as compatible with you. It recognizes that their personality is uniquely fits with yours, and like two magnets, a North Pole and a South Pole, the North Pole will always be attracted to the South Pole, and if the North Pole and the North Pole meet, they repel. Well, the human magnet syndrome, the individual who is more codependent or oriented towards other people's needs is always attracted to someone who is more narcissistic or always oriented towards their own needs. And these two opposite individuals are always attracted. And I do mean always. And it depends on how severe their self-orientations are. If someone has a severe others orientation, in other words, if they're all about other people's needs at the exclusion of their own, we call that codependency. And if someone is all about their own needs at the exclusion of others, we call that an emotional manipulator or a narcissist. And like magnets, opposite magnets, these two opposite personality types always pull each other together. And it's been my clinical and personal experience in over 25 years is that in dysfunctional relationships, and if you find a codependent, you will always find a narcissist. But so that's where I came up with the term human magnet syndrome.
So those two personality types are just sort of overwhelmingly drawn together. In your book, you share a really compelling quote that I think just sort of sets the stage for our discussion. It was a quote from your father related to soulmates and cellmates. Will you share with us that and explain what he meant?
I first have to tell the audience that my dad said a lot of silly things that made no sense. And we're just silly, and unfortunately I developed a sense of humor and sometimes annoy my own son. But he used to say that the soulmate of your dreams is going to be the cellmate of your nightmares. And although I thought it was a joke, it kind of resonated with me. It stuck with me. The soulmate of your dreams is going to be the cellmate of your nightmares. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? That means that there's something about that initial love, that falling in love experience, that's a lie. It's not real. There's a force behind it that's going to not only take that happiness, it's going to turn it into your frustration, your anger, and your sadness. So I don't know if my dad had really deep psychological insights, but he certainly made me laugh. But I remembered it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very clever, right? I mean, that soulmate element, that really strong attachment, that strong pull to another person can really help us ignore the parts that could cause us trouble. And as he so eloquently said, you know, make us feel like we're imprisoned, right?
You know, what I discovered is it's so completely human to fall in love with someone. In fact, we are genetically, we are by nature meant to fall in love in a very intense, euphoric way. That's normal. But what happens if you have some level of mental health problems or psychopathology, that falling in love experience becomes exponentially more powerful and exponentially more quick. So what happens is if you have a codependent who is by nature has some level of psychological problems, and if you're a narcissist or an emotional manipulator, similarly with psychological problems, when they fall in love, just like healthy people, and healthy is just people that have some problems, but they're ahead of them, they get so caught up in that feeling that they feel like they met their soulmate. That love at first sight is really an illusion. It's a mirage. It's a mirage based upon living in loneliness and unhappiness, analogous to being in a desert. You've been in a desert and you're so thirsty and you've been alone your whole life, and all of a sudden you think you see something. It's really not what you see. So that's the sadness between the soulmate-cellmate experience between the two opposite dysfunctional partners.
You also refer to this as sort of a dysfunctional relationship dance that seems to go on and on. Can you say more about that?
Oh, absolutely. The dance analogy started it all. As a amateur poet, and as a therapist who really enjoys using analogies and metaphors in therapy, I would come up with a term that would help describe something that was more difficult to explain, both personally or professionally. And I started to use the dance as a way to describe the codependent narcissistic relationship. And it also eventually was the basis for the human magnet syndrome. So if you think of a dance, you need someone who leads and you need someone who follows. And when those two partners are very coordinated in their respective roles, you have a potentially good dancing partnership. So if we overlay codependent and narcissist, the codependent follows. They tend to be selfless. They tend to give to others without the expectation of others giving to them. They might not like it, but that's what they do. And you think of the narcissist as being all about themselves and controlling. Those two people fit perfectly in a dysfunctional relationship and perfectly create a stable but dysfunctional relationship. So you think of the dancing couple, the controller and the taker and the giver, they are perfectly coordinated in a relationship. And so I drew the comparison between the codependent and narcissistic relationship and the dancing couple. They both fit perfectly in their opposite roles.
You mentioned in your answer there about the stability of relationships. What's the difference between a stable versus an unstable relationship and a healthy versus an unhealthy one? Because stability and health are not the same.
Absolutely. This is where I draw the distinction between a qualitative and a quantitative definition of relationship health. Stable is a quantitative definition. In other words, a stable relationship means it withstands the test of time. The relationship doesn't break up. If they break up, the two partners come back together. Stable means it lasts. So you can have a healthy stable where two healthy individuals, or a dysfunctional stable. A healthy relationship is one in which the two partners not only take care of their own needs, but are mutually and reciprocal in their relationship, in their interactions. They not only can care about themselves, but they can care about their partner. So that can be a stable relationship in that it lasts, but it also is healthy. So a healthy stable are people that are mutual and reciprocal and care and give and take in equal proportions through a commitment and through a bond of love. In a dysfunctional or in a healthy stable relationship is the polarized couple, the codependent and the narcissist, who create the dysfunctional relationship but last and don't break up or don't divorce.
So when we talk about stability, we're talking about sort of a more fact-based idea of, like, are these people still together or are they not?
Well, think of a bridge. You can have a really crappy bridge that will last for 100 years. It's narrow. It's bumpy. I'm trying to think of an example of a crappy bridge.
Careful.
But it could be, like, made of... haven't been on a crappy bridge lately.
Okay, good.
but this bridge can last 100 years. 200 years, and that's a stable bridge. But no one likes it because, you know, it's too narrow. But you can go to, so that's an example of how stable could be qualitatively poor. So unstable, okay, actually, I think I answered your question.
Yes. So what is it about the codependent and the emotional manipulator relationship that makes it naturally resistant to breaking up and so stable over time?
Yeah, but let me first define what an emotional manipulator is. In the book, I use that term to describe three distinct diagnoses: a narcissist or a narcissistic personality disorder, a borderline or a borderline personality disorder, a sociopath or a psychopath, or an antisocial personality disorder, and or someone who is addicted to a drug or alcohol or behavior, and in which they act narcissistically. So when I talk about emotional manipulators, I'm talking about a group of people with some level of distinct psychopathology or psychological problems that all behave narcissistically. So I often will refer to the emotional manipulators as narcissists. And your question was, what draws the codependent and the narcissist and the emotional manipulator together? Am I correct?
Yes. Why does that make that so? And we probably should, even for our audience, then maybe describe a little bit more about what is codependency. We kind of have backed into that, but since we're going down the definition road, let's go
absolutely.
All the way.
Yeah, that, of course. So we described, you know, what is an emotional manipulator. These are individuals whose personalities are distinctly characterized by narcissism. And narcissism is our set of traits in which you think mostly about yourself. You're entitled. You have these ideas of grandeur. You're grandiose. You think that what you know is better. You always take over in relationships. You take over in personal interactions. They're people that are just self-centered and egotistic. Conversely, or on the other side, is the person who is all about other people, and we call them codependents. Now, codependency is a term, unfortunately, has become diluted over time. When it first came about, it had a specific definition, and because it kind of leaked into our mainstream media, the definition broadened beyond sometimes recognition. So in my book, I go to great pains to define codependency specifically. A codependent is an individual who, in relationships, feels invisible, unloved, uncared for. They tend to give. They tend to be caretakers. They tend to love very deeply. They tend to be there for everyone, but they do not know how to take care of their own needs. And they habitually pick partners whose needs are more important than theirs, and they don't know how to set boundaries. So codependents are essentially, they have a self-orientation that's all about other people's needs at the exclusion of their own. So why are codependents and narcissists or emotional manipulators attracted to each other? Well, let's think about the dance. You know, if you're asked to be on Dancing with the Stars, because you're a star radio broadcaster, right?
Oh well, thank you. Yes, okay.
Do you define as a dancer? Are you more of the leader or the follower?
Well. I think in my relationship, we more sort of
I'm actually asking only about dancing. Right?
Okay. Well, I do tend to lead when I'm dancing. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So just dancing, and by no means am I actually trying to analyze you, at least not yet.
Okay.
So if you tend to lead, and you want to enter a dancing contest. Are you going to pick a partner that also leads? Because what's going to happen if you're leading the dance and you pick another leader is it's not going to work out. It's not going to feel right. It's not going to be coordinated. You're going to step on each other's toes. So like the analogous to the codependent and the narcissist is they are unconsciously are drawn to each other or magnetically drawn to each other because their personalities match. The giver, the sacrificer, somehow feels comfortable in a relationship with the taker and the controller. And it's an unconscious force. It's consciously they love each other, they like each other, they think each other is beautiful, but there's something that pulls them together that feels so right and so familiar. And that is why the codependent and the emotional manipulator find themselves in relationships because it's a match. Unfortunately, one half of that dancing partnership's unhappy, and that's usually the codependent.
And the other one's just feeling so great because they have this person who's completely dedicated to their service and to their helping them feel good. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we will continue our discussion with psychotherapist and author of the book, The Human Magnet Syndrome, Why We Love People Who Hurt Us. We're with Ross Rosenberg. Please stay tuned to The Mary Walden Show here on the Health and Wellness channel of Voice America Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
To 20% of young people will struggle with depression before they reach adulthood. If this were any other disease, we would consider it an epidemic and take action. Depression is a common, serious, and treatable mental illness. Often young people will not receive the help they deserve due to a lack of awareness and cultural stigma. Mental health is for everyone, and teaching our youth about it can even save lives. Help shine a light on teen depression and visit Erica's Lighthouse website. For more information, go to erikaslighthouse.org.
Our world is filled with strong, powerful, and accomplished women who can inspire teen girls and young women to push past fears, quiet negative self-talk, find mentors, set goals, and capture their dreams. Tune into the Inspiring Women podcast series featuring interviews with women who have overcome incredible challenges to achieve personal satisfaction and professional accomplishment. Go to www.inspiringwomenseries.com today.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are tuned in to The Mary Walden Show, raising and empowering young women, mind, body, and spirit. If you have a question or comment for Mary or about the program, please send an email to change@marywalden.com. Again, that's change@marywalden.com. Now, back to this week's show.
Welcome back to The Mary Walden Show. We are speaking with clinician and author Ross Rosenberg, who's written the book, The Human Magnet Syndrome, Why We Love People Who Hurt Us. You know, Ross, we were talking about emotional manipulators and codependents before the break. You have a very compelling theory that your book outlines with regard to this continuum of figuring out kind of where we fit in terms of our sense of self. Can you discuss your continuum of self theory for our listeners?
Sure. Yeah, the continuous self theory is a theory that just seemed to create itself. Once I figured out that there is this magnetic, almost reflexive or habitual attraction between two opposite dysfunctional types, the codependent and the narcissistic type, then I started to wonder what keeps them together and what happens if one of them gets healthy and the other doesn't. So what I did was I created a continuum to represent these two opposite types. So if you think of a continuum, on one side is the very worst of one specific variable, and the other side is the very worst of another variable that's opposite. So let's use codependents who have a self-orientation towards everyone else's needs at the exclusion of theirs. So if the continuum measures the self-orientation, and so it's really important to state that it doesn't, because you can get lost if you say it measures codependency and narcissism. Mm-hmm. So if your self-orientation is all about other people, what would be naturally the name that comes to mind? Who is oriented towards everyone else's needs at the exclusion of their own? What category do we think about? Codependence. Mm-hmm. So on the very end of this continuum, we have codependency. So now we go to the other side of the continuum. What's the most severe self-orientation of someone that's all about their own needs at the exclusion of others? Well, we think of narcissists or emotional manipulators, the borderline, the narcissist or the psychopath or the alcoholic or drug addict or sex addict. So at the very ends of this continuum, have the opposite self-orientations. So in the very middle of the continuum is a balance of someone's self-orientation towards others, the needs of others, versus the needs of self. So a zero, the center represents what I call a mythically healthy person who is perfectly balanced and taking care of others versus themselves. In reality, we all, healthy individuals or individuals who are in the healthy range, tend to fall more on one side than the other. Nurses, therapists tend to fall on the other side. And you could be healthy, and people who maybe are writers, authors, professional speakers, attorneys, might fall on the self side. So because it's a continuum, it represents the full spectrum of someone's self-orientation. So you can be an others oriented and be healthy. So if you go from zero to one, it's a 1 through 5 continuum. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. The more you go to the right on the continuum towards narcissism, the more unhealthy you are. The more you go to the left, -1, -2, to -5, the more you're focused on other people's needs. So the continuum mathematically represents codependency as an extreme and narcissism as an extreme, or emotional manipulators. But it also represents everyone else. Somewhere on the continuum, we fit. So let's say a therapist who absolutely loves listening to people's problems, who absolutely enjoys helping others and volunteers, but yet can set boundaries and has a relationship with someone who... So if someone is more oriented towards other people's needs, let's give them a -2 on the continuum. So if you think about it, and we use the human magnet syndrome or the dance concept, who's going to fit with this person? Who's going to be the natural match for this person? If they're a -2 and they're slightly oriented towards other people's needs more than their own, they're going to find that someone who's slightly oriented towards their own needs more than others, they're going to be a good match. And so the continuum represents matched couples, both on a healthy level and a very dysfunctional level.
Well, what I really like about what you do in the book is each one of those numbers, you do offer a narrative to sort of describe how that particular value, what does that mean in terms of being self-oriented versus other-oriented. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really a helpful way, because as we hear this, as our listeners are hearing this, you know, we can see parts of ourself in each one. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're a narcissist. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're extremely codependent. And I like how the book offers some narrative around sort of finding your place on the continuum. And so you have a better sense of, in the example that you just described, of who might be the type of person that would match up well with you.
Right. And what happens is it explains, it's more of an explanation than used as a tool. It explains kind of why people match up, why there's this stability, whether it's healthy stability or dysfunctional stability. And it also explains why when someone gets more unhealthy, why the relationship, or some healthier, why the relationship can be unstable. So if you think of a codependent, and of course, as I said before, the continuum goes from 0 to -5 on one side and 0 to +5 on the other. And you think of the codependent who's a -5. And of course, we've learned so far that they're matched perfectly, but dysfunctionally, with the narcissist who's a +5. So if you do the math, what number do you get?
0.
Zero. So what? Okay. By the way, as a therapist, I think I've managed to know about the fifth grade level of math. So I made sure not to go beyond my own my mathematical abilities.
I appreciate that.
So to describe a stable relationship, I came up with the term a zero sum relationship. So the narcissist and the codependent are stable because one is completely sacrificial and the other is all about themselves. So that's a zero balance. Or what happens if you have a healthy therapist, who they're in love with or dating or married to someone who is an attorney who's also healthy, who's that -2 and +2 equals zero. Well, what happens in psychotherapy if someone like myself is working with a codependent and they move from a -5 and they start to get healthier and they start to learn about their own needs and they start to set boundaries and start to stand up to their narcissist? when you don't have a zero sum balance, the relationship becomes unstable. And so that's another concept that I built into the continuum is a zero sum balance. It defines stability. It also defines instability when someone moves beyond zero.
So let's give an example of a healthy, as you term it, a zero sum relationship. Let's do a very descriptive example of a healthy zero sum relationship versus an unhealthy one.
Absolutely. So say a healthy zero sum relationship. I'm going to use myself and my wife. And as I have in my seminars, and my wife has reluctantly agreed to it because
okay.
it's a positive explanation. But my wife, Carell Rosenberg, loves to take care of me and my son, her stepson. She actually likes to take care of the house. She likes to do the laundry. She likes to clean, and she gets a lot of joy in making sure that we're taken care of. And so I would put her on the continuum as someone that is naturally more oriented towards other people's needs, but mildly. She also is able to take care of herself. So because of that, we give her a negative 2, and we don't consider her dysfunctional. But who's going to fit with Carell?
If you don't mind my interrupting, for our listeners, how does she take care of herself? Because I hear a lot of caregiving. How does she care for herself?
Okay, so when you are a healthy person whose self-orientation towards others, it means when you have a husband like Ross, who, if I ever ask too much of her or make something too much about me, because she's healthy, she'll set a boundary, she'll say, stop it. She'll say, hey, what about me? Mm-hmm. See, the healthier individuals whose self-orientations are on one side or the other, they can also take care of themselves or they can take care of others. So she will set a boundary. She'll ask for what she needs. So mm-hmm. although she's oriented towards other people's needs, she likes to take care of people. She also is good at setting boundaries and not letting people take advantage of her. That's why she's not codependent. But to make the relationship a zero-sum relationship that's healthy, she needs to find a partner that balances her out. Because what happens if two people are doing laundry, and two people are doing the dishes, and it doesn't work? So at my point in my life, I'm very focused on my career, building businesses, writing a book, and she allows me to do that. And because I don't go too far, so that makes me a positive 2, and the positive 2 and the negative 2 equals 0, that's a healthy relationship. But if I go too far, she will let me know. And then because I'm not a narcissist, I will say, oops, sorry. And then and that's what makes a healthy relationship, in which there's communication, in which both individuals have a reciprocal mutual relationship. So the healthy relationship is a zero-sum relationship that is not polarized by their dysfunction. In other words, mm-hmm. she's not codependent, and I'm not narcissistic, but we do have our unique self-orientation.
Mm-hmm. So, and how about an unhealthy one?
An unhealthy relationship is more of a polarized personality type. So their self-orientation is exclusively one way or the other. So we put them on the continuum as a negative 5 or a negative 4 or a positive 5 and a positive 4. Someone who is exclusively about other people's needs at the exclusion of their own, we call them codependents. And someone who's all about themselves or narcissistic at the exclusion of others, we call them narcissists. So they tend to be attracted to each other, and they tend to fit very, very well. And that draws them together, and that maintains a relationship. Even though there's unhappiness, it maintains a relationship because by nature the codependent is not good at setting boundaries, is not good at confronting the narcissist and getting him or her to see that their needs are as important as his or hers. So that pulls them together and creates, a stable dysfunctional relationship. Like the dance partnership, the passive person feels very comfortable with the person that controls.
So are there any exceptions to this, the continuum of self theory and the zero sum relationship hypothesis?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Because we're not defined by math, and there's so many extenuating circumstances, the continuum allows for flow. For example, God forbid if my wife would get sick, I would stop working in a heartbeat. I would cancel I would do the laundry. I would cook because I'm only a positive two. But if I would I would immediately be the caretaker, and she would be, by virtue of her illness, she would be concerned about herself, and she would need to be taken care of. So individuals who are healthy have movement on a continuum. It's not a sentence. It's not a fixed or static point of mental health. Individuals who are more impaired or have psychological problems, such as an emotional manipulator and a codependent, they tend to be stuck and don't move on the continuum. The other thing that I like about the continuum is it represents psychological growth. So let me ask you, Mary, think of a friend who is a moderate, who's all about other people's needs and exclusion of their own, and they have a person who is all about their own needs. What happens when your friend goes to therapy and she gets better and starts to set boundaries? What do you think happens to that relationship?
Well, there's definitely trouble, because that upsets what has come to be the understood dynamic in the relationship.
Yeah, the person that's all about themselves starts to get mad. And so we don't have a zero-sum relationship anymore. The relationship is now unstable. So one of two things are going to happen is that the person who's gotten healthier will force their partner to get healthier because he or she doesn't want to be alone, or the relationship won't last and it'll end. So the continuum represents stability, and it also represents the hope for people growing together and becoming healthier.
So what I'm hearing from you, though, it is possible for an individual to change their continuum of self-value.
Absolutely. That's what the human spirit is a complicated, wonderful. The human spirit has so much capacity. The human psyche does. And that's why we have therapists and mental health workers, and we have religion. There's so much that can do to alter our psychological health. Absolutely. But, however, there are some specific diagnoses, such as the emotional manipulators. The individuals who have a narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, or antisocial personality disorder, they tend to be very stuck in their mental illness or their mental disorder, and they tend not to get better. And that's what makes a relationship challenging in psychotherapy.
So what I'm hearing from you is you can intervene generally more for a codependent, but not a manipulator. Why is that?
When it comes to psychotherapy, and we're dealing with the dysfunctional ends of the continuum, what I call the fives, the negative five and the positive five, by nature of the disorder or the mental health concern, it is much harder to intervene with emotional manipulators than codependents. It is the nature of the personality disorder, and that makes psychotherapy more difficult, both for the individual therapy with the emotional manipulator and most definitely the marital therapy.
So the codependent can be helped to kind of understand to set boundaries and to set limits with the other person. But if a person really is an extreme emotional manipulator, to the point of earning a personality disorder diagnosis, they're going to be much more resistant to treatment.
They're going to be resistant because, by definition, a personality disorder is a group of disorders in our diagnostic manual, the DSM, that are defined by the individual not having awareness of their problem, by being in denial of their problem. So it makes it very difficult to treat an individual who doesn't believe they have a problem, who not only is in denial of it, but gets mad at the assertion that they have a problem. So because of that, the psychotherapist does not have a lot to work with. And there are psychotherapies that do work for these disorders. They just take a very long time, and the rate of success is lower. But with the codependents, by virtue of the dynamics that created codependency, they have the ability to get better. But let me be clear. The negative five, the codependent, in their codependency is very rigid and not willing to change. But when they can, when they decide to, or they hit their bottom and they decide to change, they have the ability. Otherwise, no one would stay a negative five codependent.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we will continue our discussion with psychotherapist and author Ross Rosenberg. Please stay tuned to The Mary Walden Show here on the Health and Wellness channel of Voice America Talk Radio. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
15 to 20% of young people will struggle with depression before they reach adulthood. If this were any other disease, we would consider it an epidemic and take action. Depression is a common, serious, and treatable mental illness. Often young people will not receive the help they deserve due to a lack of awareness and cultural stigma. Mental health is for everyone, and teaching our youth about it can even save lives. Help shine a light on teen depression and visit Erica's Lighthouse website. For more information, go to erikaslighthouse.org.
Our world is filled with strong, powerful, and accomplished women who can inspire teen girls and young women to push past fears, quiet negative self-talk, find mentors, set goals, and capture their dreams. Tune into the Inspiring Women podcast series featuring interviews with women who have overcome incredible challenges to achieve personal satisfaction and professional accomplishment. Go to www.inspiringwomenseries.com today.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to The Mary Walden Show, raising and empowering young women, mind, body, and spirit. If you have a question or comment for Mary or about the program, please send an email to change@marywalden.com. Again, that's change@marywalden.com. Now, back to this week's show.
Welcome back to The Mary Walden Show. We are having an in-depth discussion with clinician and author Ross Rosenberg. Ross, we have really been talking about the dysfunctional dance between codependent and an emotional manipulator. Let's talk about how does a person, because I'm sure our listeners, they can hear bits and pieces of themselves in all of these different definitions that we've discussed today. How does a true codependent become codependent? How does a person end up behaving in such an extreme way?
This is an explanation that can be best answered by understanding how a personality or how someone's psychological health is developed. And as many of us know, that the very first 5 or 6 years of our childhood are instrumental in forming the foundation of our mental health. If we have an emotional manipulator parent, or a parent that is largely narcissistic, and we were a child to one of those individuals, we're going to have a parent that is going to give us love, respect, or care, as I call in my book, LRC, if we somehow make them feel good, if we somehow can make their narcissistic fantasy of being a parent work to their advantage, work for them. So the child that learns how to be pleasing, learns how to be the type of child that makes their parent feel good about them, gets a lot of attention. It's conditional attention. It's conditional love with strings attached. But that child accommodates to their very narcissistic parent by learning to be focused and oriented towards the parent's needs at the exclusion of theirs. So this child goes through childhood and moves through what we call latency period to adolescence into young adulthood, with this initial orientation with their parent that I will be loved and I will be cared for if somehow I figure out how to make my mom or my dad, whomever is an emotional manipulator, feel good about themselves. So that personality orientation is cemented, and it plays out later, and when they get to the age where they start having romantic relationships or long-term relationships. That orientation towards other people's needs comes from their experience being raised by an emotional manipulator. So Freud had it right, although some of Freud's theories don't fit anymore and a little bit on the wacky side, but we are so distinctly affected by the way we were raised and the quality of the parenting we received.
And if you can turn that term that in terms of behavioral shaping, that over an extended period of time, over and over again, this person, this child, has mm-hmm. been supported and made secure by the service to the parent, that yeah. love is only gotten by service to the parent.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's really sad if you have a parent who's a narcissist or has one of these personality disorders, it's really sad that a child has to somehow behave in a way or perform in a way to make the parent feel good about themselves to get the love and attention they need. This child becomes the extension of the parent's self, the trophy child, the child that it becomes their gift to make them feel good. But let's think about the child who cannot accommodate to their parent's narcissism, the child that can't figure out how to be the gifted or pleasing child. This is a child that becomes the brunt of the parent's anger, and this child does not make the narcissist parent feel good about themselves, so they get ignored. They're sometimes sidelined, they're deprived, they're forgotten, or they're abused. So the child that cannot instinctively figure out how to make the parent feel good, the child who does not grow up being pleasing and likable and affable and good at what the parent wants them to be, is a child that has a very different childhood. It's a much more traumatic, lonely, and emotionally scarring childhood. So this child, much like the child who's going to become codependent, learns that the world is not safe and that there's no love for them, and so they're emotionally scarred much more deeply than the child who learned to please the narcissist. So now we have an explanation of where the difference between the emotional manipulators, the child who's to become an emotional manipulator, they were hurt so much more because they couldn't figure out how to make their parent happy. And the narcissist who's not happy can be very mad, angry, or depriving. So ultimately, the answer to your question is we become codependent or we become narcissistic by virtue of our parents' mental health. And I know this as a fact because I've been doing this work for 25 years. For every codependent I've ever treated who is a negative 5 on the continuum, they will almost always tell me that they had a parent who was narcissistic, who is drug addicted, and it has almost become a factual, become a fact to me.
So it's been imprinted for these people who are clearly just suffering so much in adulthood, we should point out, mm-hmm. Suffering as a codependent, suffering as an extreme narcissist, that the way that they were able to, the codependent actually saw a pathway to get the love and care that they wanted. And it was by pleasing the narcissistic parent, whereas the person who ended up as an emotional manipulator, really there was no path to get that love.
Absolutely, but I like to point out that when it all starts, it starts with an infant who actually has the ability to discern on what to do and how to do it in order to get a reaction from their parent. So according to Alice Miller, author of the Dance of the Gifted Child, she talks about that. She talks about that even as young as infancy, we can figure out the conditions that have to be met in order to get what we need. Some children can do that, but some children can't. And then there's a point in time it becomes conscious, you know, say 3, 4, 5 years old, where you actually start to think about it and you make your decisions. So by the time you become an adult, that personality type is deeply embedded, and you bring that to all your other relationships.
Mm. Yes, The Drama of the Gifted Child is an exceptional book, and I know you reference it in your own book mm-hmm. to really kind of understand the pathway of people who have ended up in relationships like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was influential in the writing of my own book, The Human Magnet Syndrome, but it also was influential in developing my own hypotheses and theories to understand why unhealthy individuals, opposite unhealthy individuals, find find a partner that makes them feel good in the beginning, that feels perfect and wonderful, but later it devolves into a dysfunctional relationship in which the codependent feels trapped. And I should say the narcissist isn't always unhappy. It's because they're so focused on their own needs, they're only unhappy when the codependent gets better.
Right. And that creates instability in the relationship, and that moves away from that zero-sum reference that you talk about in your book.
Absolutely.
You mentioned this a couple of times throughout our discussion, and that is a reference to alcohol and drug addiction. How does that play into these types of relationship scenarios?
Very good question. When I was putting together the seminar, and which would eventually become the book, I was thinking of the most narcissistic disorders that, and I came up with the three personality disorders, narcissistic, borderline, and antisocial. But I also thought that when you are addicted to a drug or a process such as sex addiction or gambling, you are completely narcissistically compelled to meet your own needs at the exclusion of everyone else. So while you're addicted, you're a narcissist. So addicts tend to be in relationships with co-addicts, or we call codependents. So my theory explains why the codependent, or the person who's severely oriented towards other people's needs, find themselves in a relationship with an addict. Because who else would want to stay in a relationship with someone who is so harmful and selfish? It's a person that doesn't really know how to set boundaries and care for themselves, and how to be in a relationship with someone who is not narcissistic.
So this might be the one case where the extreme narcissist, if there's attention or treatment given to the addiction, mm-hmm. and that addiction is addressed and managed, that. Mm-hmm. There could be improvement, actually, on the emotional manipulator side.
Absolutely. What's interesting is what I find is when I'm working with an addict, let's say a sex addict, once they're in recovery, they're sober and they're recovery and they're working a really good program, as we call it, what happens is we can find out then if they truly are an emotional manipulator. And sometimes we find out that if someone who quits their drug of choice, they're acting out, they're still narcissistic. They're just not as bad because they're not using drugs or using their addictive behavior. But other times we find out that underneath the addiction, underneath is a person who is not cannot be diagnosed as a narcissist or a codependent, and that's when the relationship becomes unstable. Which is why it is so important in alcohol and drug or other addiction treatment, we include the partner in the process, because if one gets better and the other doesn't, it creates instability in the relationship. And we know in the field of addictions that when one person goes to treatment and their partner doesn't participate, the partner often has a much higher probability that they will relapse, because the family or their partner doesn't know what to do, is not familiar with their mental health. It becomes anxiety provoking.
I think this is a very compelling way to understand, the system's understanding of addiction and mm-hmm. how people carry that addiction in their family system. And it's just a really terrific way to clearly spell out the importance of not only healing the addiction, but healing, as you term it, the dance between the right. Absolutely. That's a really, it's a great explanation of how to address that and why that's so necessary.
So if we look at a dance, and one is the alcoholic who's all about their drug, and the other is the codependent who's all about taking care of others and fixing all the problems at the addict, and they're the metaphorical dance couple. So what happens if all of a sudden the alcoholic gets better and is in recovery and doesn't want to be so selfish and self-centered and controlling? All of a sudden the dance is not coordinated anymore. The codependent partner doesn't know what they're stepping on each other's toes. Now, this might have been the dream, the lifelong dream of the codependent, that one day, we'll call her a woman, wished that her husband would quit drinking. But all of a sudden, she's in a relationship that she does not have any familiarity with. She has been her whole life in relationships, starting back to her childhood, with narcissists. And although she dreamed of this, she's uncomfortable and she's anxious. It's unknown territory. So without psychotherapy, the relationship is destined to fail, or the person is going to relapse into their addiction.
But this is actually very helpful, not only helpful, but hopeful to to provide the pathway and to highlight the vulnerability to the relationship, even as health or a trajectory towards health occurs with each individual person.
Absolutely. And that's what I try to do in my book, is to give an explanation as to why unhealthy people come together and also why healthy people come together, and the magnetic attraction of both types, but also to say that we can move in one direction on the continuum. We are not stuck in one area. We can, and my life is a perfect example. We can choose to be healthier, and we can choose to change our self-orientation, and then we can have healthier relationships and find that soulmate of your dreams. I found my soulmate, Carell. I found her on Match.com. 7 years ago. I have to think, because sometimes I'm wrong, and then and I worked really hard to find that, and I still work hard, and I know that's there for everyone if they do the work.
Well, Ross, I think that's what I love the most about your book. Not only are you willing, not only have you been able to quantify a really challenging dynamic between people who are just working to find a loving and connected relationship, you're very courageous in sharing your own story. And I think that lends so much credibility and spirit to your book, which makes it an incredibly enjoyable, not only an enjoyable read, but just a great gift to people who are wanting to find love and connection.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Ross. It's really been a pleasure.
And thank you. And if anyone wants to purchase the book, it's available on thehumanmagnetsyndrome.com. And thank you so much, Mary, for having me on your show.
Of course. Ross Rosenberg is a licensed clinical professional counselor and a certified alcohol and drug counselor. He is the author of the book, The Human Magnet Syndrome, Why We Love People Who Hurt Us, published in April of 2013 by Premier Publishing and Media. You can get your copy of his book at www.humanmagnetsyndrome.com. And to learn more about Ross and his practice, please go to www.rossrosenbergtherapy.com. Please join us again for more in-depth discussion of mental health and well-being on The Mary Walden Show here on the Health and Wellness channel of Voice America Talk Radio. You can also subscribe to The Mary Walden Show on iTunes and check out the Inspiring Women podcast series at inspiringwomenseries.com. Thank you for listening. And until next time, be well. And remember, we're building a girl rally one young woman at a time.
Thank you for listening today. The Mary Walden Show can be heard every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Central Time, and 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a great week. And remember, Mary is building a girl rally, one young woman at a time. So please join us.
Our world is filled with strong, powerful, and accomplished women who can inspire teen girls and young women to push past fears, quiet negative self-talk, find mentors, set goals, and capture their dreams. Tune into the Inspiring Women podcast series featuring interviews with women who have overcome incredible challenges to achieve personal satisfaction and professional accomplishment. Go to www.inspiringwomenseries.com today.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.